Welcome to the Capital News. I am your host, Alex Kuraitis. Today is December 9th, 2019. Thank you so much for joining me. I did not do a week ahead segment yesterday. My apologies, although I did warn you that I might not, depending on the news that broke over the weekend. Of course, there were some things to discuss. And of course, this week is going to be a busy week, but you know, we knew this last week and we're going to be focusing on a lot of stories that transpire over the course of this week. And a lot of these stories are going to be a common thread through the remainder of this year and very likely through a significant portion of next year as well. So a few things we're going to discuss today is going to be market performance. It appears that we might see articles of impeachment, or at least some sort of press conference by Nancy Pelosi and perhaps some other leaders of the Democrat Party tomorrow morning, announcing some of those articles. What's being reported late this evening is there is likely going to be a minimum of two articles of impeachment being drafted against President Donald J. Trump, most likely an abuse of power and an obstruction of either Congress or justice, perhaps both. We will wait to see what takes place tomorrow morning. We had a continuation of the impeachment inquiry and some hearings being held this morning and really throughout the entirety of today in the House Judiciary Committee. We'll discuss that. We also have the IG report from the Justice Department out from Inspector General Horowitz. You're going to read into it what you want to read into it, just like every other document that comes out of Washington, D.C. or elsewhere. Don't forget, in a couple days' time, it will be the UK general elections. So the balance of Brexit is somewhat up in the air. It has been for 3.5 years. There is obviously a growing consensus that the Prime Minister will remain in power, and the British pound has been rallying on the back of that information. That's no surprise to us. We did not anticipate that Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn and the Labour Party would win, or any other party for that matter. They are the Liberal Party, if you will. That's sort of the Bernie Sanders wing over there in UK politics. A lot of people aren't ready for that, although he was and remains adamantly against Brexit, or at least not in its current form. So we will keep you updated on that. But remember, the date is December 12th, 12/12, for the UK general elections. We also have the Federal Reserve meeting for the final time this year. Of course, that is assuming that there is not some sort of emergency meeting if we were to see some sort of repeat of last year's massive market sell-off in the month of December. So they are scheduled to meet this week. We will know their decision on interest rate policy on Wednesday. Federal Open Market Committee will meet to set interest rates. Markets are anticipating that the Federal Reserve will remain on hold. We shall see. We also have the impending 12/15 date that has to do with Donald Trump in the U.S.-China trade talks. Will he increase tariffs? Will he postpone them? Or will he cancel them? What is going to happen? We're only a few days away from that decision. Also, be very mindful, folks, that we don't know what is going on in the president's mind. I don't know if anybody actually wants to know or go through that process. But be mindful that at this juncture, Donald Trump may very well know what he wants to do. He may already be set in what he wants to do. It's also possible that it could come down to the last minute. But let's assume that he knows what he's going to do. It's quite possible that somebody else in his administration or within his inner circle somewhere, either within the White House or personally, knows what his decision is going to be. Well, my goodness, if you knew that information, couldn't you position yourself to make a boatload of money in a very, very, very short period of time? And that's the whole problem with this, folks. So we're going to see a lot of market movement one way or the other. It doesn't matter what the decision, the markets are tightly coiled like a spring here. They are going to pop in one direction. The question is, and regardless of what the decision is, how long-lived will that process unfold? If it's something that's more positive, that the tariffs are going to be postponed or canceled, then you're likely going to see that Santa Claus rally, at least for a few days, because the market will at some point want to understand what is actually in the deal. Because one would have to assume, I think, commonsensically, if there was a postponement or a cancellation of the December 15th tariffs, that means that a phase one deal is a go, that something has been agreed to, and now it's just a matter of having that signing ceremony, but details are going to have to be offered. Throughout the entirety of this process, going on 2 years, we've been jerked around. We have no details. The closest thing we got to having some details was all the way back in October already, if you can believe it, when Donald Trump was standing in the Oval Office with the Chinese trade delegation saying, we have a deal. We have a phase one trade deal. All we got to do is sign it. Of course, that was not true. Not even close to being true, because remember, only a few weeks ago, there was supposed to be a signing ceremony, if that was all true, down in Chile between President Trump and President Xi. That did not happen for a couple reasons. One, that economic summit that was supposed to take place in Chile got canceled due to the protests that were taking place in Chile, and because there was no deal. Because if there was a phase one deal, they just would have went somewhere else. Trump could have went to Beijing. Xi could have came to Washington. They could have met somewhere in the middle. They could have done anything. There was nothing, and there remains nothing. So we don't know what's going to happen. It's only a few short days away, the 15th of December, but a decision has to be rendered. And likewise, if there is no deal, there is no phase one, if tariffs are put in place, markets are going to sell off rapidly. But again, the same question will remain, how long will that be? Because I can almost assure you and guarantee you that if that is the case, that if tariffs are placed on Chinese goods at the end of this week, the markets will sell off. But in very short order, you can imagine that Larry Kudlow, Peter Navarro, Secretary Mnuchin of the Treasury, Donald Trump himself will come out and say the trade talks are going well. It would just be a matter of time. Now, of course, that would also lend credence for Donald Trump to attack and pick on the Federal Reserve, because he could say they didn't cut interest rates, assuming they don't cut interest rates this week. They didn't cut interest rates. They need to be lower. We need quantitative easing. We need negative interest rates. I've been telling him for months. I want that money. Give me that money. Remember he said that a few weeks ago at the Economic Club of New York? Negative interest rates? He wants your money. That's where it comes from. Your checking account, your savings account, your 401k, any bonds that you own, any annuities that you're invested in, your insurance company that you rely on to pay out a claim if you should need them, they rely on those bonds. Negative interest rates? They're stealing it right from you. But that's Donald Trump. That's disqualification as far as I'm concerned for being president of the United States. But you can make your own decision on that. I think that's a crime. I know it's a crime. As is what the Federal Reserve is doing. I have no problem with the president picking on the Federal Reserve until he actually puts in place or wants them to put in place policies that continue to do grave damage to this country, not just economically, but socially and politically, because it's all connected. It is ruining your purchasing power. It is stealing your savings. It's a two-for-one shot. And we told you here last week that German banks are now finally caving in to all of the pressures that have been caused in large part by negative interest rates, that they now have to succumb to actually charging all of their customers, savings accounts, checking accounts, are going to have to start charging them interest. I told you that was going to happen. It will happen here as well if we go down that route, and I hope we don't. But things are going to get very hairy over the next year. So a lot of things are going to take place over the next couple of days, so stay on the edge of your seats. I mean, the title of this podcast is Roller Coaster Week, because that's exactly what it's going to be. Lots of ups and downs and loop-de-loops. And a lot of circus animals running around as well. Market performance today, we have the Dow Jones Industrial Average down 0.2%. Same thing with the S&P 500. The NASDAQ 100 is down 0.3%. Comparable for the Russell 2000, the small cap index, as well. At the time of this podcast, late in the evening, the Japanese markets are relatively flat. Across Europe, they were a mixed bag today. Over in the UK, they were relatively flat. The German and French markets were down about 0.5%. Italian economy stock market was basically flat for the day. And so it's a mixed bag. It's a mixed bag because everybody is on pins and needles awaiting to see what comes out of Jay Powell's mouth, again, the chairman of the Federal Reserve, what comes out of Donald J. Trump's mouth as far as, well, anything's concerned, whether it's the economy, whether it's the tariff decision, whether it's the Federal Reserve or something else that he wants to discuss and or make up. Anybody's guess. We have crude oil. This being WTI at about $59 a barrel. Brent, the international metric, is up at $64 a barrel, so slightly creeping up over the past week and a half. If this upward trend should continue, well, it's not going to bode too well for the consumer, who is supposedly the last pillar standing in this economy. So if costs start to go up, that's not going to be too good, because if the price of oil continues, you're going to start seeing a squeeze across all industries. We have natural gas, however, bucking the trend and really selling off quite a bit today, down 4 or 5% at its lows. I don't know if that'll continue or not. It's going to be a mixed bag as far as what happens with production and what are projections with whether this is going to be a colder winter or not. Remember, it was only a few weeks ago where there were projections that this was going to be a colder winter, and you saw natural gas prices spike the opposite. They were up 4 or 5%. Now they've sort of given that back over the past couple of days. Gold and silver are still in consolidation as far as I am concerned, but still very much in an upward bull market. Now, anything could happen as far as some sort of melt-up that takes place in the stock market, which could render gold and silver out of fashion. Buy low, sell high. That's an opportunity to get more. Gold is trading at $1,464 an ounce. Silver is at $16.63 an ounce. Be mindful of both. Remember, like I just said, buy low, sell high. So that's some of the market news. We'll keep you posted daily here as to what takes place this week, because there's a lot of things going on economically and politically speaking. Again, we touched on articles of impeachment at the top of the podcast. We had the hearings today continuing in the House Judiciary Committee. A circus is in town, folks. Most people are already siloed in, as they have been since the outset of this whole impeachment inquiry. If you're a Republican and you support Donald Trump, you probably still support him and you're in that corner and you have not budged. If you're a Democrat and you are anti-Trump or don't like Trump, want him out of there, you're already siloed in your respective corner, and he was already guilty as charged. And then there's the small minority of people in the middle trying to do their best to call balls and strikes as they see them. I put myself in that category. For those of you who may be joining, and a refresher for those who have been with me for a while, I voted for Donald Trump. I voted for him. I wasn't going to vote for Hillary Clinton. I knew she was a liar. I did not like her track record in public office. It was going to be more of the same. We needed to get out of the same old, same old. Thought, well, you know what? Maybe this guy has the ticket. Maybe he can actually shake things up for the better and somehow maybe unite the country and move forward. Well, I have to admit, unfortunately, that I was wrong. At least at this juncture, I have been proven wrong. I thought a lot of the Donald Trump show that he put on during the campaign was more of an act. Somebody who's been in entertainment for quite a while understands how to play the media, understands how to play to the cameras. Thought that's what he was doing. And he was, but I thought it was more of an act. I thought, okay, by the time if he should win, and I predicted that he would, if he should win, by the time he gets into that Oval Office, by the time he sits behind that resolute desk and takes a deep breath and takes it all in, the weight of that office and the responsibility of being the President of the United States would weigh on him, and he would rise to the occasion. That the time for campaigning is over, the time for the divisive rhetoric is over, and he's going to have to rise to be the best person he can possibly be. Not just for himself, but for the country, more importantly. Unfortunately, he has not done that. There have been a couple times throughout his presidency that he has risen, I think, above a lot of the partisanship and above a lot of the divisive language, but he's not consistent with that. And with the language and the tweets and a lot of, even some of the actions, I just think it's very unbecoming of the President of the United States. Not that we've had perfect presidents, but this one, I think, is going a little bit too far with his rhetoric and divisive language. And he is the president of all Americans, not just the Republican Party and not just the base within the Republican Party, because there are still a lot of Republicans out there who do not like Donald Trump and who are not going to vote for him. So I'm disappointed that he has not risen above all of this. I am disappointed, as I have stated here many times before, that he has taken ownership of the stock market and ownership of the economy. I think that's a fool's errand, especially taking ownership of the stock market. I mean, pretty much, and I've stated this before, you have to be an idiot to do that. It's one thing to try to take ownership of the economy. Presidents have done that before. They want to take, you know, all of the credit if everything's fine. And then, of course, they'll push the blame onto somebody else. That seems to be Donald Trump's forte of taking all of the credit for something that looks good. If it's bad, it's somebody else's fault. He will blame the Chinese. He will blame the Federal Reserve. He will blame the Democrats if this thing turns south, and it most likely will. Of course, the Federal Reserve, I'm going to touch on this later, they've been printing money like it's going out of style, because it is going out of style. That's why I tell you to have gold and silver and some other backups to be diversified. So here's what we have as far as the economy is concerned. Yes, we do have an unemployment rate at 3.5%, but if you look deeper into it, what's the quality of these jobs? Not just the quantity that have been created, and I use that word loosely because we know about 41,000 of those jobs that were just quote-unquote created last week came from the workers who were on strike at GM, so they're not newly created jobs. They were just people who were on strike, and they've come back into the workforce, so you speak. So that's just some funny business. You also have the 2020 census taking next year. So you have a lot of people, a lot of buildup in that. So you get these people hired, you get them trained, and then they'll be working next year. So that's a one-off. It's a one-decade off. That's how that works. Every 10 years, we have a census. So he's pointing to those things. He can't really point to GDP other than the fact that it's still a positive number, at least according to government figures. I even have a little issue with that because I don't believe that the inflation number is accurately depicted and reported. But we'll digress from that. We'll save that for another time. But nevertheless, it's being reported that GDP is a positive figure, but it's not the 4 or 5% that Donald Trump promised. It's not even close. And in fact, if you've been paying attention to the Capital News, we're predicting, in alignment with the Cass Freight Index, that we're going to likely see a negative GDP print, if not in the fourth quarter, likely in the first quarter of next year. Now, will that be sustained? Will that be a negative print for a couple consecutive quarters? If that's the case, and you see two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth, that by technical definition is a recession. Now, we've done multiple videos on Capital Economics, which you can find on thecapitalnews.com or our website, or I'm sorry, on our YouTube channel at The Capital News. You can find those videos there where we discuss what the official definition of a recession is. But nevertheless, if you're talking technical definition, two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. So the economy is not as strong as it appears. Manufacturing is in contraction. Transportation is in contraction. Retail is in contraction. That's just the truth of the matter, folks. It's just the truth of the situation. Manufacturing, construction, retail, and transportation, all in contraction. Not boding well at all. You have an uptick in consumer spending based off of debt spending. Not good. If everybody had a whole bunch of money, I doubt people would be using that much credit. Of course, you could say, well, they have the cash and they're just using the cards for the points, or maybe they know they're going to pay it off quickly and improve their credit, yada, yada, yada. That's possible. That's possible, but I doubt that that's the case. But time will tell. Because again, it's not just the quantity of jobs that are out there, it's the quality of them. And when you take a deeper look, they are not that great. I believe there was a statistic out there recently that about half of American jobs are making $30,000. That's not good. That's really not good, especially in many parts of the country where that's just not enough to live. It just isn't. We'd had that discussion, I believe it was last week, following that 60-minute special, following people in tent cities or homeless people in Seattle. Very expensive city to live in. They're talking to people who have full-time jobs, yet they're living in a tent or they're living in their car or van because they don't want to live paycheck to paycheck, hand to mouth, because rent is too damn high, cost of living is too high, housing is too expensive, but they don't want to leave Seattle. This is not a booming economy for everybody. It just isn't. So you cannot say that this is the greatest economy of all time. On top of that, from the governmental standpoint, you have trillion-dollar deficits once again. You have endless wars that are continuing. You have $2 trillion that have been spent on the military-industrial complex over the last 3 years, and that's going to increase. It's going to continue to increase. So I am not pleased with the performance of Donald J. Trump. And the sad thing is, it's not all his fault. It's not all his fault. It isn't. But he isn't making it any better either. He's happy that there's trillion-dollar deficits. I mean, he has the tweets. He didn't put it that way, but he was happy that he made a deal with the Democrats. Well, what did that deal ensure? It ensured trillion-dollar deficits, as far as the eye can see. And currently, we are not in a technical or official recession, at least not as of today, as being reported. What happens when we go into recession? Because recessions have not been outlawed. What happens? We're going to have $1.5 trillion deficit. $2 trillion. $2 trillion deficit. Who knows how bad it's going to get? But this is not being taken seriously. And I am very disappointed. Because one of the main reasons I voted for Donald Trump, putting aside all of his personal shortcomings, nobody's perfect, was the fact that he was going after the Federal Reserve. But in my opinion, from the right side of things, when he was a candidate, that they're creating bubbles, that this is an artificial stock market, it's an artificial economy, because it is. It was then and it is today. Now it's just on hyperdrive. Now they're putting the pedal to the metal once again. Before, at least the Federal Reserve was doing quantitative tightening. They were pulling back off of their balance sheet. Now they're throwing more funny money into the system, causing more distortions, causing more malinvestment, keeping zombie companies alive longer than they should be. Zombie company is pretty much defined as a company that does not have enough cash flow to cover their debt expenses. And according to the Bank for International Settlements, which is basically a central bank for central banks, is reporting that non-financial companies, 6% of non-financial companies qualify as zombie companies. That's an all-time high. So 6% of non-financial firms are zombie companies. They are not making enough money, not generating enough cash flow to cover their debt expenses. It's not good, folks. And when you have central banks continuing to print funny money out there, all this does is it keeps these bad operators going for a lot longer. And that is not productive for anybody. It's not good for the people who are productive. It's not good for the entrepreneurs and managers out there who are running a tight ship, because they should be getting that money because they know what they're doing. We should have more of what's good. You got these zombie companies and you got central banks and governments throwing a hissy fit that they're going to go out of business or at least restructure, which means everything's going to slow down. Oh no, we can't have that. Got to keep these people up. So let's just give them more and more money. They don't know what they're doing. That's why they're in the problem that they're having. You understand this? This is completely backwards. Completely backwards. People who are doing the right things and investing and saving and being prudent, they're getting screwed by the people who are partying like it's 1999. Oh yeah, give me more debt, give me more leverage. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just going to bet on black. Hopefully it hits, baby. If it doesn't, who cares? I'm going to get bailed out. Those people are the ones being subsidized. That's a huge problem. Huge problem. I don't enjoy paying for it, but I am. That's what your tax dollars are going towards. The money in your pocket. I mean, pull out money in your pocket and look at it. It is losing value as you speak, as we speak here today. As you sit there. Because the Federal Reserve is putting in $60 billion a month. $100 billion overnight on a nightly basis to keep who knows how many companies alive on a nightly basis, because they don't even know what the whole problem is. I believe that in the repo market that we discuss here, the overnight lending market, I don't think anybody has a full grasp as to what's taking place. A lack of trust, a lack of liquidity, something is not right, because this was supposed to be temporary. I told you back in September when they said it was temporary, it was not going to be temporary. And we've been proven right here once again at the Capital News. And I told you they were going to have to put the pedal to the metal, which is exactly what they've been doing. And this will continue for some time. Not good, folks. Not good. So from the politics of everything, getting back to the House Judiciary Committee hearings today that continued in the impeachment inquiry. Again, it was a showboat. Dog and pony show. You heard what you wanted to hear you're a Republican, and again, you're defending Donald Trump, then you like the performance of the Republicans, I imagine. Most of their arguments were not based off of the facts of the case. It was grandstanding. It was going after Ukrainian intervention. It was in the 2016 election. It was going after Joe Biden, his son Hunter Biden, Burisma, all that type of corruption, pointing the blame and fingers at somebody else. So it was distraction. It was not arguing the facts of the case at hand against Donald J. Trump. And the reason they are not going after the facts is because the facts as we know them today are not good at all. At all. And if you're honest with yourself, you have to at least agree with that. Now, if Donald Trump has exculpatory evidence, he should have brought it forward. Should have been brought forward weeks ago to put an end to this entire impeachment inquiry. Rise above it. Rise above the partisanship. Say the country does not deserve to go through this. We have many issues that we have to resolve together as Americans, as Republicans and Democrats and everybody in between. We have to rise above it. Boom. Here's a couple documents that proves I've been consistent throughout the entirety of my administration when it comes to Ukraine policy. Nothing has deviated here. It has nothing to do with 2019 and 2020 politics. It has nothing to do with Joe Biden. This has to do with XYZ. Period. End of story. He hasn't done so. He's never even made the argument that that was the case. I've tried here on multiple occasions to mount a defense for Donald J. Trump. I said, if you have this type of evidence, you're going to have a leg to stand on. If you release this type of evidence in conjunction with the other, you're going to have two legs to stand on, and the Democrats are going to have a hell of a time coming after you. But he hasn't done that, and he hasn't made the argument. And other Republicans haven't made that argument either. 2017, Ukraine was corrupt. 2018, Ukraine was corrupt. In both of those years, the Trump administration released the money and the aid to Ukraine. It was not held up. There were no investigations asked for. Nothing. Now you have an individual who gets elected in 2019, President Zelensky. He is vetted by the State Department. This guy's the real deal. We can work with him, make sure he gets this military aid, about $400 million, and make sure he gets a meeting here in the Oval Office in Washington, D.C. Why? So we can send the message to Russia that the United States stands with the people of Ukraine and this administration. Nah, I don't think so. Nah, I don't like him. I don't trust him. I think there's still some bad things going on over there. I don't want him here. Despite everybody, National Security Council, State Department. No, we've been dealing with this guy for a while. We know. He's been vetted. We know. He's the real deal. Do these things. It sends a good message that we are standing with the people of Ukraine, with the new administration, and it's going to send a message to Russia. Step back. Step off, because we got this guy. We're going to help them. Don't do it. I don't know. Why? Who told you otherwise? Rudy Giuliani and his associates, two of which have been arrested by the FBI. Not his State Department, not his National Security Council, not his Defense Department. Rudy Giuliani and two of his associates who have been arrested by the FBI told Donald Trump evidently what he wanted to hear, and he said, postpone everything. Hold it. Put him on hold. I don't want this guy over here. We don't know. Makes everything look highly suspicious, folks. It makes everything look highly political. Because you knew they were corrupt in 2017 and 2018, and you didn't hold it up. Now you got a guy who got elected on fighting corruption, who wants to put an end to it, which means there was corruption before, and nobody disputes this. Nah, we can't work with this guy. I just don't know yet. And now we got to hold it up. And of course, Joe Biden was not running for president in 2017 and 2018. But lo and behold, 2019 rolls around and boom, Joe Biden's running for president. We got to put this Ukrainian military aid on hold. That right there is not a good fact pattern for the president. Now, if the reverse had been true, if the aid was held up in 2017 and 2018, and there were previous phone calls with that Ukrainian administration at that time, talking about 2016, talking about CrowdStrike, talking about Burisma and the Bidens, then you could say, well, at least he's been consistent. He's been consistent. And when he picked up the phone and had that phone call with President Zelensky on July 25th, He just could have said, hey, President Zelensky, congratulations. I just want to keep you in the loop of something that my administration has been working on with the previous Ukrainian administration. I just want to make sure we're on the same page, that it continues, because these things are very important to the United States of America, and they should be to you as well. That was not said on the transcript. It was not. He said, do us a favor. Look into 2016. Look into CrowdStrike. Look into a company. And he mentions the Bidens. And he says, talk to Rudy. Talk to Rudy. Rudy knows what's going on. He's a good guy. Now, he did say, talk to Attorney General Bill Barr as well. But he brings in his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani. And if memory serves me correctly, it's President Zelensky that brought up Rudy Giuliani's name, which means he already knew Rudy Giuliani was doing something over there. And we still, to this day, do not know entirely what's going on. But we do know that Ambassador Marie Yovanovitch, the former ambassador to Ukraine, who was removed from her duties, had a smear campaign, a public smear campaign, mounted against her by Donald Trump and his personal attorney, Rudy Giuliani, in the media. She was removed. She is known for fighting corruption. Democrats and Republicans alike in the House Intelligence Committee, during that phase of the impeachment inquiry, praised this woman when she testified. This, again, is the woman who was attacked by Donald Trump during her testimony. He was tweeting out against her during her live testimony. So continuing with the smear campaign against this woman's credentials, she was with the State Department and the Foreign Service for 33 years. Again, she was praised by both Democrats and Republicans alike for her service. Again, it was disingenuous when we had the analysis of Mark Levin of Fox News on an episode a couple weeks ago of What's His Life, Liberty, and Levin, and he said Marie Yovanovitch was an Obama holdover. Very interesting how he phrased that, wasn't it? Not quite honest. A little disingenuous. Because you know why? Because she's been in service for 33 years. Barack Obama came into office in 2008. Can you do math? She's not an Obama holdover. She's been here since Reagan. She's been here since Reagan. She served Republicans. She served Democrats. But everybody wants to just, you know, phrase things to throw everybody off the scent, throw everybody off the track that what Donald J. Trump did was wrong. And you have no Republicans with the backbone to say it. And of course, Marie Yovanovitch, known for fighting corruption, she's the one that gets kicked out, even though the argument by the White House is Donald Trump is so very concerned with corruption in Ukraine. Well, then why would you get rid of an ambassador who's known for fighting corruption? Doesn't make any sense. And again, he could have gotten rid of her for any reason he wants. You just say, hey, Ambassador Yovanovitch, thank you very much for your service. Everybody I speak to says nothing but good things about you, but I am moving in a different direction in Ukraine, and I want somebody else there. Thank you for your service. We're going to bring you back to Washington and the State Department, and then we'll find another role for you. Thank you very much for your service. That's all he had to do. All he had to say. All he had to say. And even Ambassador Yovanovitch, in her testimony, said, I could be removed for any reason. But when you have a smear campaign against this woman, and your argument is, I want to fight corruption, yet she's known for fighting corruption, now you got a problem. Just keep your mouth shut. He couldn't do that. Had to have a smear campaign against this woman. And it raises questions as to whether or not she was going to play ball with what Rudy Giuliani and his associates were up to over there, because, you know, it's being reported that there are some other business interests that are taking place over there. I don't know. Nobody knows. That goes right back to a podcast we did a week or two ago. Who to believe, what to believe. We don't know. Because if you turn on Fox News, you're going to hear what you want to hear in regards to the IG report. If you turn on CNN or MSNBC, you're going to hear what you want to hear on that side too. You know, but you got to be careful who you're listening to and what their interest is. Because everybody's trying to sell something. They got a book, they got a website, they got something that they're trying to do. You know, they're trying to get more listeners. Everybody is, including myself. That's why I tell you to go to different sources. Look at everything, listen to everybody, read everything you can. Because if you're only listening to Fox, you're only getting part of the picture. If you're only listening to MSNBC, you're only getting part of the picture. You're doing yourself a disservice. Because again, folks, we have a very hard time in this country of even agreeing on the facts themselves. And if we cannot agree on the facts themselves, then there's no foundation of which we can pull ourselves out of this mayhem in which we find ourselves. So as far as the IG report is concerned, Republicans seem to like it. Fox News seems to like it because it shows that there was some abuse of some of authority, some errors, some big errors that were made when it came to some members of the FBI and Justice Department. So they're clinging to that. Of course, this report did not rise to the trumped up effects that it was supposed to bring from Donald Trump. Remember, this is supposed to be, this was it. This was the bunker buster, if you will. People are going to be arrested. This is it. This is going to be historic, politically speaking. Didn't rise to that at all. It's some people who are going to be dealt with. It's an FBI that's going to have to do some switching around. It's a DOJ that's going to have to make some moves to get these things cleaned up. The IG report finds no political bias. And what that basically means is the net-net decision, despite what people may have thought personally of Donald J. Trump, because we know that Lisa Page and Peter Strzok, to name a couple through the released transcripts that we covered earlier this year, we know that at least personally they did not like Donald Trump, and I'm sure they still don't like the man. But their personal feelings, at least according to the IG, did not have an impact on the final decision when it came to investigating Donald Trump and the Russia collusion and everything else. Now, I'll take a deeper look into the IG report, and we'll have further discussion on that. But, you know, it all depends on what you want to hear. The Republicans like it, you know, and they're very selective, just like the Democrats are. Nobody gets a break here with me. But right now, here's what you have. You have Republicans who seemingly like this report because it shows that there was wrongdoing at the FBI. So they like this IG report. They didn't like the IG report and the decision that was rendered when it came to the whistleblower. So again, you're being very selective. It's all politics. You're siloed in. You get the information you want. Oh, I love it. If it's not what you want to hear, oh, I hate it. Something has to be wrong. It's a conspiracy. It's the deep state. Ladies and gentlemen, if that's how we're going to play ball moving forward, this republic is screwed. We're done. That's it. Because if it's all deep state, if it's all conspiracy, then you can't believe anything. You can't believe anybody. Because if you're just nitpicking what you want to hear, we are screwed. The republic is dead. And it ain't going to come back. That's it. This is 1984. This is Orwellian. Up is down. Down is up. Lies are truth. Truth is lies. We're screwed. That'll be it. Game over. Game, set, match. You have to call balls. You have to call strikes when that's what they are. You can't just go cherry picking what you want to hear because it makes your story sound better so you can sleep better at night. It's not how it works here. Truth and justice are supposed to be the dogs that you want in this hunt. Not Donald Trump, not Joe Biden, not the Republicans, not the Democrats. Truth and justice is what you should be after. Period. End of story. Because if you want to play ball with the Republicans and the Democrats and all of this deep state gotcha stuff, you're not a part of the solution, you're a part of the problem. So there's a lot more to cover, a lot more we're going to get through this week. Stay updated on the market performance, articles of impeachment, the IG report, UK general elections, the Federal Reserve, and a tariff decision. My oh my, buckle up. Thank you so much for joining me today, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a pleasure having you. As always, please like, share, subscribe, get the word out, and leave your comments. We do love hearing from you. Stay diversified, stay vigilant, and stay with the Capital News. I am Alex Caritas. Godspeed.